Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Play Ball. And I'm Dan Hirschberg, and we are in beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for today's show, where the greatest ballpark in the country is situated, PNC Park. And I am very happy today to be joined by my good friends on the stadium annual tour. We have Jody Price.
Hello.
We have Dallas Sacker.
Greetings, baseball fans.
And Jerry Karp.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, so very pleased to be here. And in today's show, we're going to talk about the baseball rules, the newest rules, and analyze them from our standpoint here. So let's jump right into it. And the latest rule change for this year is the ABS, the automatic ball strike situation with catchers or batters. And I'm going to let Jerry open up with his thoughts on that.
I like it, all in all. It's not a perfect system, but I like it. I think two wrong ones per game is a good balance. And my unscientific theory is that I believe that it's made the umpires focus more, because I feel like you haven't seen this year the egregious bad calls of like a ball, you know, 3 inches off the plate, obviously not a strike, called a strike, or the opposite that you used to see. I feel like you don't see that anymore because the umpires know they're going to get shown up. That's a, as I said, unscientific theory.
Unscientific. Dallas?
I think it's a pretty good idea. It goes pretty quick, doesn't slow the game down. And my observation is when we went to the ball game here in Pittsburgh on Thursday, I was impressed that the umpires were doing so well that even when their calls were wrong, it was by such a tiny margin. So all in all, pretty good.
Mr. Price.
I'm in agreement, actually. I went to a minor league game last year, the Albuquerque Isotopes. It was the first time I had seen the ABS system and how well it worked. I agreed with you, Jared, two wrong times and you're out, is right. But I remember earlier in the season, it was one of the umpires, and I came on the guys who never gets calls right. Like three consecutive pitches where he was questioned on, and he got them all wrong. Mm-hmm. I think you're right that they're much more cognizant of it now.
And it's kind of like the flip side of what Dallas was saying, which is showing how good the umpires are is also a reflection of the fact that they're not, none of them are making those really bad calls that everybody used to howl at.
Well, actually, there's been some umpires that have been definitely had a lot of reaction to for calls being overturned. My opinion, I think two, that's fine. But I also think there should be a limit on how many times you can do it. So you may as well make it a little bit of a strategy, as opposed to the other night we were watching a game and it's the first inning and the guy's challenging something, and why would you waste it in the first inning? You know, have a little strategy to it. I think having basically unlimited attempts to do that. I also have a little bit of a problem when the pitch, and you look in the box, and it nicks the corner. I mean, it nicks it. Mm-hmm. So, and that suddenly becomes a strike. I think there should be, and I don't know how you do it, but somehow it's got to be in there at least halfway. I mean, honestly, if it's nicked and it gets overturned, or even if it's confirmed, it just seems make no sense. Any thoughts on that?
So, Dan, you're saying it's not a game of inches, but a game of millimeters?
Well, I guess I am saying that.
Well, I guess they would have to change the rule, though, because if the rule in the rule book is that it's a strike if any part of the ball crosses the strike zone, then they have to do it the way they're doing it. Otherwise, they'd have to change the rule that it's a strike if half the ball, you know, goes through the strike zone. So it, because they have to have the technology following the rule.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying it just seems ridiculous that if the ball literally nicks the corner, all of a sudden it's a strike.
But the flip side to that, right, is some of the batters who will challenge, and if they're right, do they have that good of a control of the strike zone? I think a lot of them do. right? So I think it actually shows you how well some of the eyes are in these guys. Right. And I mean, if you're off by this much and you're confident, I mean, you got a, you know, and you're right, you've got a good eye. I don't think that's so bad.
But I agree with Dan because in a way, because if the ball is like a millimeter in the strike zone, then from the batter's, for the batter's perspective, it's not a strike. I mean, in terms of whether the ball is hittable or not, right? Whether they should be swinging at it. You're supposed to swing at strikes. Mm-hmm. If the ball is just a touch in the strike zone, then from the batter's perspective, it's not a pitch you should swing at because it's not the strike zone, really.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, but the same times, if you know, you only get two wrong choices, right? If you're really uncomfortable about it that close, you don't challenge.
Right, but I'm not talking about whether it's right or wrong to challenge. No,
okay,
I'm talking
okay.
about whether the pitch is a strike for the intent of what the strike zone is about, which is it reasonable for the hitter to be able to hit that pitch?
But then going back, because you have to change the rules, because by the rule, it is. So it's an interesting discussion. I think it's fascinating, right? Because you're right, but at the same time, the rules say that if it touches the strike zone, it's a strike.
Well, here's an interesting point. If it's, let's say it's a call on a stolen base attempt at second base, right? So the somebody challenges, safer out, whatever. And it's so close that they say, well, it might be safe, it might be out, but we're not overturning it. The rules, it stands. The call stands. They're not mm-hmm. saying the call was wrong. It stands. So if a pitch is called a ball and only a sliver of it, then they should have the, you know, they should have the latitude to say, well, the call stands because it's barely in the strike zone.
So, well, I apologize for that. Right? But the replay rules, it has to be indisputable that the call was wrong, right? So in the one you said about the stolen base, mm-hmm. right? If you can't indisputably say that the call was wrong, the call has to stand. With the ABS, you can see it nick the corner, mm-hmm. which means it's indisputable. Which is where I would argue, or at least okay. where I would at least make the argument.
Right. If that's a criteria that makes sense, I'm thinking right. about. I'm sort of taking the more humanist. was it reasonable for the umpire to call that a ball?
Okay. Yeah.
And yes, it was reasonable. We see where you're coming from on that one. You know. But I get it.
So let's add a little bit to this. So early in the season, there was a game, and I guess it was called a strike or a ball, and the catcher, just for the heck of it, said, "I challenge that." And it was overturned, and the guy struck out. It was originally a ball. It was a strikeout, and the game was over. And afterwards, he was asked about it, and he said, "Well, why not?
Right.
Why not take it?
Yeah.
Why not
yeah.
take a
yeah.
shot at
yeah.
it?"
Yeah.
So, what do you think of that, Dallas?
Well, I think his team was smart that they had reserved a challenge for the ninth inning.
It's an interesting yeah. strategy.
And the same thing with strategy, right? If it's a replay, let's say the stolen base at second base. Again, if it's the last out, why? If you have a challenge left, why not challenge?
Well, they do. They
yeah,
do that.
Right. Because if just by chance, whether or not you thought it was a wrong call by chance.
Right. Well, I still think that there should be a little bit more of a strategy to it, as opposed to you can just keep, you know, time after time or after time in a game. And you should be limited to five challenges, I think, you know, during the game. And then there's a little strategy as opposed to, you know, every once an inning, somebody's challenging a ball and a strike.
Well, then if there's a set number, you can do five. Then there's no... What happens if you challenge and you're wrong? Then you lose two of your challenges. There'd have to be some other sort of.
We'll have to check with the rules committee at the commissioner's office to find out what we need to do to amend the rule.
Well, I was going to say a minute ago that, well, if it's only a tenth of an inch and they just call it a do-over, but of course they're trying to
speed up the game.
Or they call it a foul ball.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So one of the interesting things I just read yesterday is that, not necessarily because of ABS, but games are actually getting longer again.
Because of the ABS?
So they're saying it's part of it, but not the only reason. I didn't read the whole article, but they're not speeding up the game anymore.
Hmm. Well, you got that, and you have the challenges, which... Yeah. The ball, one thing else about ABS, It's pretty instantaneous. Right. It's right for the ball.
Yeah.
It's 2 seconds,
you know, and the computer tells you they're not going to the videotape in New York or whatever.
Right, but if you're challenging a stolen base, for example, all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting there, you're waiting, and they're looking at, you know, 20 different angles and you know, that sort of thing.
So one of the really, to me, fun things I was reading about ABS was, I guess, humans shrink a little bit during the day. So when they measure you for the strike zone...
Wait, we're getting scientific here?
Yeah, it can change the strike zone based on the time of the game. So when they measure you to set the right strike zone, it comes into play a little bit.
Okay.
So do they constantly measure the players, or do they do it at the beginning of the season?
I don't know. It's a great question. But one of the things, I remember this discussion with us a few years ago about when on TV when they showed the box and the space. And I'm not a really big fan of it.
I think they should only do it during replays.
Right. But it's also static. So they could show that it was outside, but based on the actual strike zone, it's not. For the batter. Or whatever. High and low.
I guess for the next time we talk about this, we're going to have to hire a scientist to analyze. That's a theory I never heard about your body shrinking during the course of a game.
Not a lot.
But what about the guys who crouch, like Ricky Henderson, right? Were they measured it based upon his batting stance?
I always wondered about that, actually.
Or because then they could just change their batting stance.
Yeah, it brings up some interesting...
No, I think they do it based on actual height, as if you were going for a physical. Okay. So Ricky wouldn't be getting over anymore by leaning over. They'd be measuring his actual height.
Well, right, but then if he squeezed down, it would change it. His actual height is him standing straight up. And
to the umpire, it would change it.
He didn't just lean over, he crouched down.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, is that they would be using his actual height. So he doesn't gain an advantage anymore by seeming to decrease the strike.
Oh, because if he's crouched over, they're going to call a strike at his chin, because that's his actual height.
That is correct.
Which is not what the idea of the strike zone is supposed to be, though.
And by the way, this is a good segue, talking about Ricky Henderson and stolen bases. So we have the slightly larger bases. Mm-hmm. We have the limited throws to first, or second or third, I guess, for that matter. And then, so we're seeing a lot more stolen bases now. And what are your thoughts on that particular rule or changes where the base is slightly larger and the number of throws you can do to hold a runner on?
We'll let Dallas go first.
I'm good with the larger base because more steals, I like more action. I find the limit on the throws to the base to be an unreasonable restriction on the pitcher. If you have somebody like Ricky or Lou Brock, it seems really unfair to the pitcher that he can only toss over there a couple of times. So I go back to the old one on that.
What would be a reasonable amount of throws? I mean, you can't have it, you know, there were days where a guy would throw to first, you know, seven times, eight times.
In a row.
that doesn't bother me. I kind of like the traditional baseball in that regard.
Well, I don't think there are that many Ricky Hendersons and Lou Brocks to be concerned about, so I wouldn't use the outliers as the criteria for the rule myself. I think it's okay. I like the idea of enhanced. And again, it's a strategy. When do you throw over? You know, how many would you save it for? You know, how do you fool the runner when you're going to use your second one? I'm okay with it.
I kind of like the fact that they limit the number of throws. I think that does speed it up. It makes it a little more exciting in a way. You know, I mean, that's the way I feel about it.
I don't have a problem with the little bit larger bases, right? I think that's sort of interesting. And I love steals. Steals and triples, to me, are two of the best plays in the game. I think two is a little limiting. Or it's actually three. The third has to be an out.
But you can... Right. You can throw over after that, but either you get the guy out...
Or it's a balk, right. Maybe they add an extra one or two. So it's, you know, three or four just to make it a little bit more... Maybe strategic at that point. Two to me is maybe a couple, one or two too few.
So, do you guys know the story about Ricky Henderson when he was on the Newark Bears?
No, and for those people who don't know what the Newark Bears are,
it was a minor league team, but it was an independent league team when Ricky was out of Major League Baseball.
In Newark, New Jersey.
Yes, and he was trying to get back in, and so he's playing this independent league. And it was a game, Henderson was on first, it had rained, and you know, it was an independent league stadium, so the drainage was not that good. The field, there was evidently a mud around first base, and the pitcher for the opposing team was very nervous about having Ricky Henderson on first base, and he kept throwing over, and Henderson kept having to dive through the mud to get back. And finally, this is the story I read, Henderson yelled at the pitcher, "Stop throwing over here, I'm not going to steal."
And then, of course, he stole.
He did.
A lot of Ricky,
man of his word.
Yes.
A lot of Ricky Henderson stories for sure.
Yeah.
How about the rule about pitchers? They have to throw to three batters. You can't just change them intermittently. It's no longer lefty, lefty, you know, six pitchers in one inning, unless, of course, it's a 17-run inning. But that might be...
So I remember, you know, on some of these trips, we've always like, okay, here comes the parade of relief pitchers, right? So I don't have, I honestly don't have a problem with it. I think it adds some interesting strategy, and definitely the thing that slows down games is when you get into that every batter you're switching pitchers.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent rule. I was really happy when I read that. Whoever thought that up is, gets my vote.
That's a good one, and I agree. That was a good one.
Yeah, I'm a big supporter of that rule. It became ridiculous. You go to some of these games, and just the endless parade. You know, 3-4 pitchers in one inning.
Yeah, right.
Good riddance.
To get out, to get two outs, right, or whatever. And
we're not get any outs.
We're not getting any outs.
Because I still have a grudge against Bruce Bochy for the playoff game against the Cubs. He changed the pitcher for every batter in the ninth inning, and nobody got anybody out.
Yeah.
And what about the speeding up the game with you have to throw a pitch within 13 or 15 seconds or 17 if there's a runner on, I guess, whatever it is, or the batter has to be in ready to go immediately. I like that one.
Yeah, me too.
I really do.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. Just we're back to the way they played the game in the 60s. You know, there was no messing around in those days.
Batters didn't step out after every pitch. The pitcher's complaining for a while, and I was like, boo-hoo, dude. It's like, figure it out.
Right. Well, it's like, was it Nomar Garcia-Pierre?
Yes.
Who after every pitch would stop out, adjust his gloves, adjust his uniform, get back. I have no problem with that.
I remember seeing
the rule, that is.
Replay of the 68 World Series, Cardinals, Tigers, and just Willie Horton's at the plate. He never stepped out. He just stood there and waited for Bob Gibson to throw him the other fastball.
He probably wanted to get it over with.
Probably if you stepped out on Gibson, the next pitch was coming out right about your head.
Let's talk about everybody's favorite rule, the ghost runner in the 10th inning. Is anybody, let's show of hands, is anybody in favor of that?
Nobody here is a professional baseball player, so no.
Even an unprofessional. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's an absolute disgrace to baseball that you don't have to earn your way on base. It shouldn't be that way.
I called it desecration. It's even worse than the City Connect uniforms.
I don't mind some of the City Connect uniforms. That's just me. It's like the Mets and the Astros, and I know we, you know, the Sky City ones.
I didn't mean to change it.
Sorry, my bad. It's my bad for doing that. I hate the Ghost Runner. Right, especially because now two rules for the game, one for the regular season, one for postseason. And I'm with you, Jerry. It's a desecration.
No, it's terrible. And, you know, I don't know how many people have said it's a little league maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is. I mean, it's just, you know, we'll get the game over.
Do we have mercy rules now if, you know, the team's up by 15 runs after, five innings?
If there's a certain discrepancy of runs, I don't know, that's when you're allowed to put a position player.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the closest.
That's the closest thing.
So basically they're saying the game's over because you're having a guy lobbing up for the plate.
Although I have a slight thing. If they're going to do that, I think put him on first base. So then there's a little strategy. You bunt the guy over or something as opposed to just The guy's already on second in scoring position. But again, I guess that would defeat the purpose of what they're trying to do, which is end the game as quick as possible.
Well, put the guy in second, and the team only gets 2 outs.
Ooh, look at that. That's something. All right, so I'm going to throw out this one other thing that was sort of brought up. It's not a new rule or anything. Kind of quick reactions. We're kind of getting close to the end here. But so the commissioner of baseball was kind of hinting at some point during the offseason that maybe we should have a re-entry rule so that fans could see a really good hitter late in the game as a pinch hitter, because that's what the fans want.
But he only gets 2 strikes.
I don't know if that was part of the rule.
The golden batter rule is what they're calling. So all the rules I think we all agreed with, right, are more like really like tweaks. How to keep the game shorter, how to keep interest. The golden batter, the ghost runner type stuff, it changes the game. To me.
So are we recording this or are we online now?
No, we're recording.
We're recording this, so we can watch what you say.
We could do 2.
All sorts of stuff here.
Any more rules to talk about?
Dallas, you want to have your final thought on that before we head out?
I think it's completely bogus, and I would be very disappointed if that was adopted.
The pitcher has to pitch without a uniform on. How about that?
I like that. Yeah. That would be the rule. Well, listen, everybody, this was a great, fun discussion about rules in baseball, and we'll send all of our recommendations to the Rules Committee of Major League Baseball, including a copy of this podcast, which you can find on RadioSaintPete.com or on my Facebook page at some point, which is Danny Baseball 56. Or if you want to call up and complain to me, don't call, but you may email at Danny Baseball56 at yahoo.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Play Ball.